I will call the meeting to order, even though we don't have, unfortunately, a lot of legislators yet. We do have a very full committee hearing today, and we don't have a quorum, so I will not be able to have someone move the minutes or do announcements yet. But we will start with Representative Kiffmeyer, and if you could please come forward with your testifiers, and welcome to the committee. And did you ask the member to introduce your bill, or would you like me to, or not to introduce it, but to move it?
Madam Chair, I would ask that you would move it. I had asked another legislator who is late today.
Okay.
But if you would do it, I'd appreciate it.
All right. In absentia, then, I will I move House File 1174 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Kiffmeyer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time today, and we'll go as quickly as we can. I have with me here today three superintendents from the Big Lake Becker and St. Michael Albertville School District, as well as a Director of Education for the Northern Rights Urban Cooperative, as well NAN Records. And as they come to the microphone, it usually works better if they just introduce themselves when the time comes. The bill that we have here today in front of you in House File 1174, in its simplest way, is just to allow these school districts to work together in a cooperative way and not force them into prematurely organizing in another way that's expensive, it takes money, and this is a time when these entities don't need to be put in those situations of spending money, taking time, and especially when it does not end up in better or higher quality services to their students. This situation has been worked for a while, and I'll defer to Ms. Records, who will go through just a brief little history about it all, and then we'll have the other three superintendents. So they have been legally constituted, and this bill, in its simplest form, just takes the idea language where it says they should be legally constituted within the state, and it allows them to be defined as legally constituted. And that is basically in Section 1. Section 2 says that, however, while the school district may provide those services to its students to a fiscal host, which is mainly a financial situation, the district that is a member of a fiscal host continues to be responsible for FAPE. And I think that's an important consideration here, and that is basically how they're doing. With that, I will introduce Ms. Records to go through a few moments with you.
Welcome, Ms. Records. If you could identify yourself for the record.
I'm Nan Records. And it's spelled just like it sounds. So.
Okay.
Madam Chair and other esteemed members of the committee, I thank you for providing us the opportunity to for testimony for House File 1174. As I said, I'm Nan Records, and I'm the Director of Special Education for Sherbourne Northern Rights Special Ed Cooperative. Our cooperative is comprised of four member districts, Becker, Big Lake, Monticello, and St. Michael Albertville. We have a combined total population of nearly 15,800 students, and we serve nearly 2,000 students in special education. As of what is called our December 1st child count, we are the largest special education cooperative in all of central Minnesota. We are also larger than any school district in central Minnesota. The Sherbourne Northern Rights Special Ed Cooperative has been in existence since the early 1970s, when oh so long ago a group of superintendents recognized that it would be more efficient and cost beneficial if they worked together to provide services for special ed students and their families. And we were formed under what is called a host district configuration, and that means one member district, and in our case Monticello, serves as the host of our cooperative. Simply put, that means that all co-op employees, of which there are nearly 115 certified and non-certified staff, are hired under Monticello school contract and hired by the Monticello School Board. It also means that the federal special ed dollars flow to Monticello for each of our member districts, and these dollars are primarily used to pay for the co-op staff and the other programs. The Sherbourne Northern Rights Co-op has a strong reputation for providing quality services to children and families with disabilities.
And I just will break in here just to let Representative Kiffmeyer know, and all the testifiers, we have until 5 after for this hearing, and we do have leave some time for Dr. Melcher. So if some people take too much time, we will not be able to hear from all the witnesses.
Okay. Since becoming a director in the co-op, about once a year, the Department of Ed asks me, are you ready to become a joint powers cooperative? And I say, nope, it's not, it's working fine, you don't need to change. And what they talk about is they've expounded on the benefits of becoming a joint powers. And since 2005, I can say we've also had an outside consultant look at our configuration, and we've determined it's the most cost-effective, beneficial way of providing services. Well, last July, we had the department came to us. Instead of saying, is it time to make a change, they said, you must make a change. And it was no longer going to remain an option for us to stay as a host district. And with that notification, I pulled together a meeting with the co-op superintendents and the Department of Ed, and they told us if we didn't reconfigure by July 1st, 2009, we would have to lose our federal dollars the way they were flowing currently to us. We were also told at that meeting that there would be no fiscal implications for the reconfiguration. After the meeting, my co-op board of superintendents directed me to research the process of moving forward to the reconfiguration. And during that process, part of my work took me to the Rum River Special Ed Co-op, which has just undergone a reconfiguration from a host district to a joint powers cooperative. And they've worked with MDE through that process. Through the process, we've learned, and MDE has also learned, and are now stating that a reconfiguration would cost us approximately $70,000 to $75,000 startup fees, with a high annual cost to also do this reconfiguration. And so what we're here today is to say, you know what, in all of this, we're providing high quality services in a cooperative way for all of our member districts at a way that we feel is most cost beneficial. And to reconfigure, it doesn't meet the needs of our students, and in fact will have a negative impact because that money's got to come from someplace. And so what I ask you is that it just seems to me that as we are in a state of the economic times that we're in, and we're also in a situation where we're in a state that the governor has looked for cooperative things to happen outside of our state, I ask that you put forth some legislation that would allow us to continue to operate as is without the cost implications that are looking forward ahead for us. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Superintendent Dooley.
Steve Dooley from Becker Public Schools. Thank you. Just to add, Nana's covered it quite well, but in January when we met with the department, we were kind of feeling that their problem was being able to recognize us as a legal entity. And that's why we went the route of the legislation. In that meeting, they seemed to agree that that legislation might help that. And so really what this legislation would do is give them a little broader interpretation of what is a legally constituted education agency. So that's the reason we went the route we did. And as Nan said, it really is hard for us to think of spending more money and not providing additional service to kids. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Dr. Marcia Zucker, I'm superintendent of schools for St. Michael Albertville. And I guess I just want to add to this that, the department has talked about some issues that they think they all have from the federal government. But we see those issues of faith is true for the legally constituted agencies that are already out there. Examples of special ed co-ops like Masico, et cetera. So we're saying why in the times where we're at financially now, we are all not in a position to spend extra money that won't help us. Maybe everybody has to change down the road, and then everybody's going to be changing to meet those needs that they're interpreting in the memos they have gotten from the federal government, that maybe we all have to. But right now, saving dollars when we're having to make hard decisions for our students where we should be spending money that doesn't do anything for our students, it does less. And for all students, not just your special ed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Superintendent Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For over 30 years, this has been a very successful entity. And I don't see the logic, haven't been shown the logic for the current timing of making this change, given the fact that it will cost us additional dollars, significant dollars, not only for startup, but anytime you go through a strategic reorganization, such as moving from the current co-op into a joint powers agreement, there are ongoing costs, not only financial costs, but also efficiency costs. And those costs, every dollar, not only costs special ed students and special educators, but that's another dollar that we have to cross-subsidize out of our general fund. So this impacts every student in all of our districts, close to 15,000 students. So frankly, if it isn't broke, why try to fix it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we will have questions for members, but I think since this is kind of a new topic that I have, don't think we've dealt with, why don't we have Dr. Melcher give his testimony, and then that may will help us with our questions as we consider this bill. And then Representative Kilberry, you are first up with a question. Welcome, Dr. Melcher.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. Federal law makes local education agencies eligible for federal special education aid and then holds them accountable for certain standards. And those standards include providing a free appropriate public education, being responsible for supplement not supplant, for maintaining effort, and so forth. The situation that we have with Section 2 of this bill is basically an attempt to separate out the accountability requirements of federal law from the flow of funds, and we don't think that federal law would allow that to happen. So basically, school districts have a choice. The individual school district can be responsible for FAPE and for maintenance of effort and supplement not supplant, basically for managing the special education program, and receive the money directly, or school districts can band together in a cooperative, and then the cooperative becomes the local school district in the eyes of the federal government and takes on all of the responsibilities for providing special education services, which includes FAPE, maintenance of effort, supplement not supplant, and so forth. And so the concern that we have with the bill is in Section 2, where it basically says that the cooperative, in this case, will get the money, but the local individual school district will be responsible for all of the accountability requirements. We think that's a violation of federal special education law. It doesn't work.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Kilberry.
My question was on Section 2 also, where it said notwithstanding any law to the contrary on 121, I was really confused by that. Any law to the contrary. I'm not sure what that totally means.
Was that? And Kilberry, then you're wondering what laws
exactly
would they not have to follow by, you know, because it's pretty broad.
Well, I was thinking maybe I could use that terminology in every one of my bills.
That would be a way for you to get out of the Ag Committee. Okay, very good. Well, let me just, Representative Kiffmeyer or Ms. Records, maybe you could let us, you know, tell us exactly what laws you meant by that, or which ones you're talking about, the ones Dr. Melcher was talking about, I think, but since they're federal.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you very much. And we had quite a bit of discussion about this. Should we come in with an amendment? But we really decided as a group to do that. On the other hand, our discussion also led us to that we would just do a simple verbal amendment and remove Section 2 from this bill.
Okay.
We'd be willing to do that.
And Representative Kiffmeyer is not on the committee, and she said earlier there was I moved her bill, but there was a member she had asked to move the bill. Representative Anderson, would you like to move the oral amendment?
Yes, I certainly would, Madam Chairman.
Representative Anderson moves that Section 2 of the bill from line 1.19 through page 2.2 is be stricken from the bill. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Dr. Melcher, do you want to comment on what's remaining?
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I think eliminating Section 2 eliminates the primary concern that the department has with the bill. I think I should probably share with you that the kind of correspondence we've had with OSEP, the Federal Department of Education, Special Education Office, suggests that we may have some general issues with the way that we've administered the federal funds through co-ops to school districts, not only for host district co-ops, but other co-ops, and the department is currently seeking clarification from the U.S. Department of Education on the requirements generally. I think some of the other concerns that we have, or that the U.S. Department of Education has, relate to the issue of cooperatives that whether they be a host district or an official cooperative that are basically serving as an applicant agency for federal funds, but then aren't following through in terms of responsibility for FAPE and maintaining effort and so forth. And we want to be really cautious in terms of issuing any major change in the way we've done business in Minnesota for many years. But just as a heads up to you, we think there may be some issues generally that would require some changes where cooperatives, whether they be regular cooperative or host district cooperative, would either need to make a decision on taking on responsibility for FAPE and basically operating the overall special education program or being responsible for, rather than necessarily operating themselves, the program, or having the money flow to their members, and then members could contract with them for services. So we're being cautious. We did get a memo from OSEP, which seems to say that we can't have the money flow to co-ops of any type, whether they be host district or regular co-ops, and then have the member districts be the ones that are actually responsible for FAPE, that the money and the accountability requirements go hand in hand. And that would be a major change, not just for this co-op, but for co-ops across the state. So we don't want to issue that unless we're really sure. So we're doing some further checking and asking, did you really mean this? And we're in the process of doing that right now.
And Dr. Melcher, do any other states have fiscal hosts is that anything that the federal government has allowed anywhere else, or is that what you're seeking clarification on, because we're the first state to ask that question?
I think we're seeking further clarification on that. Some other states have got kind of regional service entities for special education. I know Wisconsin, for example, has their organizations. They're more kind of like arms of the State Department of Education as opposed to getting their powers from the member district. So we need to do a little more research before we're ready to make a
final. Very good. Any other questions from members? Any testimony for or against in the audience? Any final comments from Representative Kiffmeyer? Or it looks like Ms. Records has one as well.
Well, I think at this point, in regards to interest of their time and all of that, so we appreciate their time and your consideration. I want to reiterate again how important it is to have the support, as you can tell from even Dr. Meltzer. This school district has no clear direction right now. They make this change, expend these costs, and there may be another change. Let's get through clarification, all that understanding, and have it come from the feds, and everybody understands it. Then put the school districts, and they're willing to do that. They just don't want to do it two times or three times. They want to be able to stay as they are, keep functioning as they are, and then when the time comes, they're glad to respond to that and deal with that, but they don't want to go through multiple times. And it is important that in the meantime, this language will both help MDE and the school district to be able to say, we have done what we can during this time to make sure that we have the greatest amount of legal cover and protection and understanding for what we are doing. And especially during this economic time, let's focus and allow these school districts to not put anything harder on them when they're going through an already difficult time. Let them conserve their resources and not make them spend money that doesn't really make any final change to the benefit of the students. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Ms. Record, very short.
One final.
Time is up for this hearing.
Thank you. One final comment. It is our hope that the language in that first subpart will allow us not only to continue to operate as a host entity, but will allow us to continue to operate as we are now. That there can be a very broad interpretation of that, and we would hope that the department would see that language allows us to operate as is without all of the additional burdens that a joint powers entity have. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And House File 1174 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kittmeyer. Representative Eakin. Okay, Representative Eakin, have you asked anyone to move your bill, or should I?
Madam Chair, I have not, so...
I'll move that House File 895 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll have you back on day 12.
It's good to be here, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. And what I have here is a bill that would create Commonwealth School Districts. We call them Commonwealth School Districts. It would include three independent rural school districts that could come together for the purposes of sharing administrative costs, and also they may also include instructional and learning services. And I think it really sends us in the right direction of trying to save costs in this way, but there is an initial cost to it, an implementing program. And this would provide grants for schools that want to do this. It's a voluntary program. And we're asking for $300,000 in grants, for three grants that would go, and $100,000 to each entity that would want to do this. And also, there is one provision here that also allows for other governmental agencies to be involved in this if they want to or agree to share services as well. And actually, I think that there will be, there is a need to change some of the wording on, let's see, that would be line 1.9. I don't know if somebody would want to offer an oral amendment on my behalf here, but it would be to strike and to put in a period after districts and to capitalize other, and then on line 1.10, after services put in may be part of the Commonwealth District. I think the way it was written, it would say that you have to have a governmental agency also included in this for it to work, and that was not the intent. The intent was to allow another governmental agency to be involved if they so choose and if they agree to share these services.
Okay, Representative Eakin, I would move that for you, but I'm not sure I got it straight. On line 1.9, you want to have a period after districts,
correct,
strike and... and then start with a capital for other. I got that on line 1.9.
Right.
But then on line, there, I was putting it after the second services. That's, it didn't make any sense. Okay. And then on the line 1.10 after program services, put may be part of the Commonwealth District.
Correct, Madam Chair.
All right. Any questions on that amendment or the author? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The oral amendment is adopted. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do have with me today two school superintendents who would like to testify, Mr. Jerry Neslin from Monaga and Mr. Mark Schmitz from Staples-Motley, and I'd like to give them the opportunity to testify.
Okay, who's going first? Superintendent Neslin? Or?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Mr. Neslin from Monaga currently, and next year I'll be in the Monoman School District. I've been in several school districts since 1977. I've been a superintendent. That process of watching school delivery mature and change has brought me to this table, because I think we have extraordinary challenges today in terms of financing what we have and financing what we want. And the folks that we've been working with the past, so probably 10 months, and we have MRAs, representatives that support this, Lakes Country Service Co-op out of Fergus Falls, Southwest Service Co-op, MREA with Sam Walsup is here, also Roger Moll. Senator Roger Moll is with us, and he's been involved in this thinking process. I like to recognize that Minnesota has a lot of different delivery opportunities, and we're already talking today about host districts and joint powers, and we have consolidation opportunities, we have sharing and caring, we have special ed, service co-ops, you name it, vocational, and so on and so on. And these are great enabling statutes
what we're talking about with this bill is kind of another opportunity to take what I consider in the rural areas a lot of duplicated things every few miles. We have duplicated buses, we have duplicated food service, nursing service, technology, you name it, the non-classroom things. And if those folks can get together and say, we will figure out a new strategy to become a common delivery for the non-classroom group, then we're going to be able to free up some resources for the learners, for the students, for the children in their classrooms. I've watched school districts going through these things since the 70s, and you know, I like to see the learners. We need to get the money at the classroom level. So this was kind of the background of the backdrop of that. The grants would be competitive. The Commissioner of Education would be reviewing them. They might lead to some, you know, other statutory suggestions or requests to maybe tweak some of the emerging kinds of things that might be required out there. But it's, to me, it's a great opportunity. Do we need, you know, some grants, some money to get people to the table? If that's the issue, I feel we do. Currently, we have joint powers. We have other opportunities. But if I'm going to sit down with five superintendents, which four of us are going to walk away and say, you'd be the one that stays? We almost need some incentive sometimes to get us thinking, to energize the school boards, to say, okay, if there's some dollars from St. Paul, maybe we can get a third party to gather some data to help lay this out, look at the options, and figure out how we can help our students. So, again, I worked with firm superintendent, Chairman Uselman, who's in the thinking process. To my right, Mark, and Mark will speak briefly, and he's from Staples Motley area. So I guess I'll conclude that I think it's an opportunity of investing. I have been in the school district. I did some pairing years ago. As a matter of fact, Senator Rajamo helped me with that one, and Representative Deacon's father helped me with that one back in the early 80s. But again, we used some department and some legislative seed money because it brought people to the table. And it moves us forward. So the amount isn't the issue today. It's the concept. Is this value or isn't it a value? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And this is definitely the year to hear all these kinds of bills. And you may have noticed the whole agenda, at least the beginning bills, are all about being more creative with the situation that we're in. So Superintendent Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to echo...
And if you could restate your name and title for the...
Mark Schmidt, Superintendent of Schools for Staples-Motley School District. And just to echo Representative Eakin and Jerry Nesland here, we need to be thinking creatively, and there is this aspect of perhaps a little bit of a carrot or an incentive to allow this to happen. Staples-Motley School District... Jerry has been superintendent in many districts, and for many years I've been a superintendent for 3 years going on four, and for one district. So we come to the table with different levels of experience. And however, between being a principal and a superintendent for 10 years in rural Minnesota, all but two of those years I've been involved in budget cuts. Honestly, as a principal, as a superintendent, as a parent of three small children, I'm tired of cutting in the classroom. I'm tired of cutting, period, but particularly programs in the classroom. And our district covers 480 square miles, and about the mid-90s we had 1,800-some students. Now we're slightly over 1,300. And what that ends up doing is resulting in a loss of economy of scale and a loss of many programs for students. And for this bill is written loosely enough to basically not dictate to organizations, but to get them thinking and get their heads together on what potentially can be done as we look at the duplication of our services and what Jerry's district offers, what my district offers, even looking at like the city of Staples and what they do and what we can be doing as entities to be combining some of those resources so that we can continue to maintain opportunities for our students and expand opportunities for our students, whether they be partnerships with online learning or various educational enhancements that we're doing. So I would just simply back what these two individuals are saying, and I'll give us some freedom and flexibility to put our heads together and see what we can can come up with. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have questions for members, Representative Ward, and then Representative Newton. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Smith, it's good to see you again. Representative Newton, as Chair Gladden said, this is a year that we're talking a lot about consolidated services and shared services and those kind of things. Thank you for bringing this forward. The where you have changed the bill, amended the bill to read other governmental agencies who agree to share administrative and program services, and Superintendent Smith talked about the city of Staples, looking at all kinds of collaboration or whatever. The language, though, after that, administrative services may be shared include, and instructional learning services that shared include. I'm just suggesting that maybe all of that language is pretty much directed at schools. Maybe you want to look at, and I don't have any suggestions right now, Representative Meekin, but, rather than say like superintendent, administrative financial management or whatever, just so that it is more, conducive to looking at a truly shared kind of, services, not just a school district, but combining other governmental agencies as well. Just a suggestion.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and Representative Ward, thank you for that suggestion. I would agree, and so there are a few things in administration that administrative services that maybe could apply to other governmental agencies, but you're right, it does focus primarily on education, and we would like to cast the net as broadly as possible, so thank you for that.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my questions actually go to what Representative Ward has, that I would actually suggest the opposite, that you don't start listing those things. You just leave it open-ended if you are going to combine all services, because I think of things like community development, staff development, curriculum development. I mean, you could go on and on by listing all the things, and I think it might be easier not to list anything to say you're going to share administrative and all other services. And another question I have actually is... Are you eliminating two school districts in this process, or are you still going to retain the individual identity of the districts and just have a sort of a superstructure?
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, no, it would not do away with the two other school districts if three decide to come together for this purpose. It would just be sharing certain administrative services or instructional services. So there would still be separate. The three school districts would still be separate. You'd still have the site school boards, but there'll just be some shared services among them.
And Madam Chair, and a follow up: have you considered consolidating districts so you have just one district?
Representative.
Madam Chair and Representative Newton, we have not with this bill. I think that would be an awfully big jump. This could lead to, in some cases, that happening. However, in our area, one of the problems in our area, we want to make sure that we don't go down the road of further consolidation, actually, in our area, because the distances are so great between the schools already. So to maintain, I think, separate school districts, basically site management districts, I think is important. And this is actually designed, I think, to pursue collaboration rather than consolidation. Saving costs, but still having, the individual school districts maintain their separate identities. And I think that's important to a lot of the communities in my area, especially, to maintain that independent individual identity for each independent school district. Now, it might lead to, in some areas, where you don't have the great distances like ours, it might lead to something like the consolidation of the district, but that's not what the intent of this bill is.
Representative Anderson, and then Mr. Falstaff. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Subdivision 2, Line 16, or 1.116, you mentioned a planning grant, and then on Line 1.20, you talk about an implementation grant. Talk about those two different types of grants.
Representative
Kim. Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, they are intended to be the same, the planning and implementation grants. And I don't know if you want to speak to if the superintendents have any more to add to that, but it can be used for, I mean, the planning is part of the implementation. So I really see it as one and the same, and I don't know if, yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walseth. Is there anyone else after Mr. Walseth who cares to testify for or against the bill? Okay, Mr. Walseth.
Madam Chair, members, Sam Walseth on behalf of the Rural Education Association. I just want to go on record in support of the legislation before you. We think this is a softer, gentler approach to getting districts to be a little more creative through very tough budget times that we're in. And as Representative Eakin said, this is a way, you know, we have these bigger distances. It's going to be hard to shut buildings down. We don't want kids on the bus for 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon. It's a big waste of time and actually a big expense as well. But this is a way to try and save some dollars. And MREA does support voluntary and incentive-based approaches to sharing services.
Thank you very much. And we have one final question, Representative Depsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Aiken, would you be open to an amendment as far as the grant piece of it, so that the planning grant actually, the plans would show a savings more, at least equal to or more than the grant itself? In other words, if we are going to be giving the school district a $100,000 grant, or up to that, that had to be based on a fiscal evidence or a plan that would be equal to or greater than the grant.
Madam Chair and Representative Depke, I would be open to such an amendment because that is the intent of this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Depke.
Could we do we want to do an oral amendment to that, or should we, or do you want to have something drafted up? How would you?
I would say, being given the time frame, and we got so many testifiers, mm-hmm. many from out of town, it would be something for you to work on with Representative Eakin. Should we include this in the omnibus bill, then that amendment could be...
I'd be happy to do that if that's approval by Representative Eakin.
Yes.
Nodding his head.
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you very much. Any final words, Representative Eakin?
I think this is important in saving costs, and that's something that we should be considering, especially now. And I do think that it will actually help in some of our areas where it'll help avoid consolidation in many cases, because they'll be saving costs through the collaborative efforts and sharing administrative costs and other also instructional costs. So thank you very much.
Thank you for this creative bill, and House File 895 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go on, members, we didn't do this at the beginning. The minutes, we need to have someone move the minutes of March 24th.
So moved.
Representative Depke moves the minutes of March 24th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. Minutes are approved. We're now going to have a couple of announcements while you all settle up there. The first one is from me, and the second one is from Representative Garofalo. And the one from me, give him a minute to think. He forgot about his announcement that we didn't get in yesterday. My announcement is, members, and anybody in the audience who's looking for legislation, we now have, Shannon Patrick now has filled up all of our remaining committee time with bills from members. So if there's any more that come forward that get introduced that we haven't already got kind of penciled in, we are going to have like, two-minute hearings for those bills, or have them bump other bills of lesser priority. So just so you know, we're very, very packed with our remaining schedule, and we will not be having, like policy does, a night meeting. Representative Garofalo, your announcement.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I just want to remind people that next Tuesday is a committee hearing in Farmington. And for planning purposes, so we know how many people are there, I'd really appreciate it if you could get back to Ms. Patrick about whether you'll be attending or not, either way. And we certainly don't want to draw the ire of Mrs. Garofalo. By Mrs. Garofalo, I don't mean my mom.
The real boss, huh?
Yes. And so it would it'd be good if our members could get out there and make it to the event. And, you never know who's going to stop by from the South Metro. So maybe you might want to be there. Thanks.
Representative Ward. Representative Ward, before we all decide, could you let us know what the menu is for that night?
Representative Rockwell.
No, we're not going to talk about that in front of everyone else. We're just talking about the committee hearing, Representative Ward. So, but I'd be happy to discuss with you afterwards.
Thank you, and I do encourage members to go. I think that for collegiality and working together, and we do have our omnibus bill coming up, to have this sort of time together, both hearing one more time from the public now that we have Senate, House, and Governor plans all on the table, and then some time afterwards to informally get together and talk about things, I think could only be for the good. And speaking of the good, we have Representative Swales and McClarland before us. And you're both on the committee, so whoever is moving the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 1665. And we have the DE1 amendments that would put the bill into the shape that we would like.
Representative Swales moves the House File 1665 omnibus bill, and then would you like to move the DE1 amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Swales moves the DE1 amendment, just an author's amendment, to get it in the shape that she would wish. Any questions or comments, discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The motion or the amendment is adopted. Representative Swales and McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I would like to thank my co-chair of the work group, Cheryl McFarland. We have had an amazing 6 weeks, 7 weeks now of working together, putting together what we think is something that is going to make a huge difference in our state. We began the work group, first of all, just trying to understand what is already happening in the state of Minnesota in terms of cooperation, shared services, and efficiencies. And what we discovered along that path, there is a lot going on. Our first major meeting with stakeholders included the strand on nutrition. And in your packet, you will see several handouts that we gave you just from that one strand, showing the cost savings that these member districts can achieve. The one that I think is the most interesting is the piece that has the spaghetti sauce and those kinds of things on it. Now I can't find it here in my papers. But you can see that thousands of dollars can be saved by a school district on just one product. And this cooperative or this food buying group stretches all the way from Moorhead down to the most southern districts. There are 77 school districts already participating in this buying group. The second week we focused on IT, and what we discovered there is a lot of work is going on in the area of technology and sharing. We met with Patrick Plant from the Anoka-Hennepin School District, and then we also had John Polson from the Department of Education. And there's a thing called SIF. It's called an interoperability framework, which is I learned more about technology than I ever dreamed I would understand. But it's a horizontal communication piece that allows districts to be able to share data. For instance, if a student would move from the Twin Cities to Duluth, the student would have a common identifier, and test scores, transcripts, and things like that would be sent in a very secure manner to the new district. Each of these pieces, it just simplifies and it decreases paperwork and the kind of load that individual districts tend to get burdened by. The third week we talked about transportation, and here we not only talked with experts in the field of software and routing systems, particularly we talked about the state of North Carolina that has a statewide routing system that moves students very efficiently and has saved in the tens of millions of dollars for that state. We have obstacles in our state with things like open enrollment and a lack of a common calendar. But as we talked about that, we did see that there are many districts that are already working together in establishing those things, getting students moved from one part of the community to another part very efficiently. We also invited SEIU. We wanted to talk to the union to hear how bus drivers feel about some of the issues concerning the transportation problems. And that was very helpful and very insightful. And probably the capstone of our working group was the field trip, the road trip that Representative McFarland and I and Julie Paris from TIES took to Marshall, Minnesota, where we had the opportunity to visit with 30 superintendents and listen to them talk about how efficient and how much money those 30 districts are saving by working together in the Southwest Service Cooperative. And these things that we have learned about have led us onto this path of, first of all, celebrating what we're doing in the state of Minnesota, which is very, very, very excellent work. And yet, there seems to be kind of an aha experience going on with many people thinking that this is new. And if you talk to the superintendents and the members of these service cooperatives, they will tell you they have been doing this for years. So at this point, I'm going to turn this over to Representative McFarland, and I'm sure she has other comments and would explain the bill.
Okay, McFarland. Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things was one of our main desires was to have something that was extremely common sense and not a mandate. We already know that districts across the state are already doing things not only amongst themselves, but with their cities and counties and the state, and we just felt, why not be empowering people to share these with other people in the state? So our journey took us many places, as she's already, Representative Swales has already mentioned. In your packet, you'll find a small spreadsheet that shows part of what's in this book. I'm sorry, that's my cell phone.
Oh. Your arm isn't quite that long.
No, sorry about that. TIES did a research of all the school districts in the state and got back 75% response. And anyway, you will be able to see that districts across the state are already doing many shared services. The other thing I want to comment about, we're talking not about just procurement and purchasing, we're talking about sharing services. And I think that's one thing that's kind of gotten confused in this conversation about shared services. From there, things just kept leading us from place to place. I happened to be at a St. Paul Chamber event, and I ran into Ted Lilly, who is the former chair of the St. Paul Area Chamber, and he said, Carol, did you know that we've been doing research on this for the past 5 to 6 years? And I do have some handouts that I can have the pages passed out. These are like goals to us, so if you don't want to keep them, please turn them back in. But what you will see is that they have a spreadsheet that spans all of the cities within Ramsey County, and the county, and on the back are some of the school districts within Ramsey County that are already sharing services. It's a fabulous spreadsheet. It's just another evidence of how business also is helping engage with sharing services and procurement. And I wanted to thank the chamber. Molly Grove is here today, too, and I wanted to thank the chamber for their help with this. Also, he started talking more about it, and he mentioned, gee, did you know about the state auditor's best practice review that was done in 2004 on cooperative efforts in public service delivery? And the 2005 auditor's report on contracting for services and procurement. This research has already been done, and there were recommendations that really align up with what we're proposing today. From there, that led us to, he also said, gee, have you talked to Commissioner Baggio from the Department of Administration? So we made an appointment with her, and we learned about the state's current cooperative purchasing venture that's already there that all school districts can take advantage of. The other thing that she shared with us are best practices that are happening in other states, research on procurement and shared services, which led us to the one of the areas was the California's Best Practice Center, and hence the wiki part in our original language, which is a link to other websites. We have since gone a different view, but we're sad. We thought wiki would be a neat thing to have in statute, but anyway, it was just another confirmation.
I don't like the two of you to be sad.
Anyway, and then so we brought all this knowledge that we got together, and thanks to Tim Strom, our researcher, he he went and took all of our information, and he found within statute that under the state auditor there is already a best practices area. And so that led us to state auditor Rebecca Otto, and we've talked to her, and she's going to be coming forward and talking about it. Part of what we have done in the DE1 is to expand this to all units of government, because it's something that it costs just as much to do it for only school districts as it does to do for all government units. And so why not? So with that, I think that we should invite some of our speakers to come up.
Yeah.
So,
Madam Chair, we have State Auditor Rebecca Otto. We have Sally Vogt, who came all the way from Marshall with the South Pacific Service Co-op. We have Sam Walseth and Grace Kelleher, and probably others who would like to also speak at this time.
Very good. And we are planning about at the most 10. We'll probably take it with that many testifiers, so 10-2 for this hearing.
Thank
and we've
you,
got
Madam
two
Chair.
More bills. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Auditor Otto, welcome. And I hear you are the one that dashed and made them sad about the wiki, but you'll take the testimony.
Madam Chair, I'm Rebecca Otto, State Auditor. I did not mean to make them sad. I will tell you these authors are the most passionate women and lawmakers, and they really believe in good government. They have been great to work with. We saw what they were trying to do, and we worked with them to facilitate. Here's what we have. We obviously want to keep costs down for everybody, for the state and for our office, but still accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. And there's so much cooperation going through all levels of local government. They said, just schools. I said, if you really want, we can do the schools, but if we're setting it up, we can set it up for cities and counties and, you know, and towns as well. And what I wanted to say for this and for their effort here is that there is really good government going on around our state. Not all of our entities are the same in terms of resources. What this will do is provide a clearinghouse of the good things going on. And so if a district says, you know, we want to look at buses, and they can go in, and hopefully once we get it all set up, if this goes through, then they can look at what other districts are doing and decide what's best, the best fit for them. So it's really assisting schools and other local governments for a very tiny price tag. We did a fiscal note, and it's very, very, very small, so it's still money. But sir, the fiscal note was for 10 was $22,000, and for 11 was $16,000. For 12 was $17,000, and for 13 was $17,000. So, you know, we try to help you all as much as we can, and we try to use common sense within our office. We also will check in with the stakeholders, all the groups, to figure out what will be best in terms of helping them, how we present it. So we'll do it right the first time. And then I guess it's up to you all to figure out how you would fund that. But we're very happy to do the work if we can. We've had lots of requests from researchers, from local government folks, from House nonpartisan research. You know, is there a clearinghouse right now? There's not a clearinghouse. We have reports. We do a special districts report, but this would be a step further, and I think that the gain will be pretty great. So if you can make the investment.
Thank you very much. And this bill is going to Finance Committee and then on to, is it State Government Finance? So we will be working with them as well. So thank you very much, Auditor Otto. And Sally Vogt, am I pronouncing that right? Mm-hmm. Welcome, coming all the way from Marshall. They must have brought you back from after their visit.
Yes, thank you. And we were so pleased to have Representative Swell and McFarland visit Marshall. We were thrilled that they journeyed out to see what we're doing on behalf of our member districts. My name is Sally Vogt. I'm the board chairman of the Southwest West Central Service Co-op, and I'm here on behalf of our board and staff and our member districts to support House File 1665. And we think that Southwest West Central Service Co-op is a model of shared services. We are collaborative, we're innovative, we're efficient, and what we really like to do is provide access for our member districts. Most of our districts are small districts, and they're unable to provide these services independently, and we'll just take a minute to tell you what we do. We are, as you know, a cooperative is enabled in statute. We don't have any taxing authorities. We don't have any appropriations. We have no mandated participation in our services. So people join our services because they're useful and cost-effective for them. Southwest West Central Service Co-op serves 59 public schools and 14 non-public and charter schools in the 18 counties of Southwest and West Central Minnesota. We have think that our programs are part of the shared services example that we're talking about here. The TIES services survey identified a number of shared services, and they included regional management information systems, intermediate districts, telecommunication clusters, education districts, and what we want to say is Southwest West Central Service Co-op is a single provider of all of these services in Southwest West Central Minnesota. In the regional management information system, 58 of our member school districts participate in the shared services and payroll, shared finance and payroll services. We partner with TIES for the student system and data warehousing services. Our cooperative also provides premium pricing for things like paper and office products and food and buses and custodial supplies and many other things within the state and also within national purchasing connections so that we can provide premium pricing to our members. The service co-op is an intermediate district and a special education cooperative. 48 of our member districts participate in the special education director services. These are specialized education programs like autism, audiology, speech, language, pathology, psychology, physical and occupational therapy that our small districts cannot provide independently, but they voluntarily join together to work together. Our speech language pathology service is something we're really pleased with because we're offering that via telemedicine. And it's an innovative approach on how we can serve our member districts with webcams and interactive software without moving people around. So that is something that we're very proud of, and it's working well. 32 of our member school districts are in something called a Trillion Project, and that is providing a statewide area, a wide area network with access to high bandwidth so that we can provide instructional programs and interactive television programs. One of the more recent ones is our technology coordination services. We have 5 FTEs that provide technology coordination for our member school districts that choose to participate. And most of the time they are unable to provide this on their own, but shared services work. We're an education district. We provide curriculum and assessment coordinators. We provide professional development to thousands of educators every year. And nearly 25,000 of our students at some point participate in the shared student programs, Knowledge Bowl, Spelling Bee, many different kinds of academic programs as well. And we're also a school district because some of our school districts have alternative programs and need programs for at-risk students, so we're also a school district that provides that special service. We partner with MDE for technical assistance to the districts that are not needing AYP, and in some science and math initiatives, and we help the department achieve their goals as well. And our service agency is also an insurance provider, and 95% of the schools in our region purchase their health insurance through our insurance pool. So these programs and services are all under the same governance, the board that I serve on. Participation is all voluntary, and as a result, we're very much aware of what our constituents need, because if they don't purchase our programs, we don't have any revenue to provide the program. And I guess what we'd like to do here is support this bill, talk about shared best practices, share what's been working for us, and then we're very interested in learning what's working best for other folks too, because that's what we want to bring back to our member districts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kelleher. And then Mr. Walseth, and then we have at least one question. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I want to thank Representative Dreiling for her foresight early on, realizing this was an issue for school districts, and it was going to be a bumpy year, and we were going to need a little help and a lot of reform. And this started this whole process by creating a subgroup with these two fantastic women who were really interested in listening to school districts first and then making law. And also, kudos to the Auditor Otto, it's a good tagline here, for all her work. She's been a pleasure for school districts to work with through our audit process and assisting local governments. She's a proponent of really getting the work done and not making the news and headlines every day. So it's wonderful she's brought into this process. I'm going to cut to the quick, members. I'm going to really talk about some differences we have between the other body
and this bill. And I'm going to tell you what this bill doesn't have. This is not a mandate for your school district. This is not something where school district aid is taken from your local district. This is not a bill that would replace your school district's business officials with the cheapest per hire business official. This is not additional busy work for your local district. And this is not a fake amount. In fact, in the other body, they refer to a 30% savings for local districts based on what a consultant, an outside party, might do. And this does none of those things, members. This really brings a solution for districts. There's not a one-stop shopping place for school districts to go for services and products in the state. And this bill not only makes true reform and true innovation, but it really solves the problem for school districts. And once again, I want to thank these two authors who've really sort of slayed a dragon coming on the other way for school districts. This bill makes a lot of difference, and it's a pleasure to be here today, and I appreciate their hard work for schools.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walsh.
Well, Madam Chair, members, Sam Walsh, MREA, tough acts to follow here. But I do want to reiterate that MREA is very much in support of the concept and the bill before you today. We are very much opposed to the other concept legislation that is floating around in the other body. As Ms. Kelleher said, that would create administrative burdens, mandates, a clumsy consultant process. This is a much more pragmatic and functional approach to help educate districts and actually all local governments about what the good things are that are taking place. One thing we've learned through the task force work group process, and I want to thank Representative Swales and McFarland for really taking the time to learn about what's going on out there, and also to thank TIES for the survey work that they did. What I think we learned through that is that a lot of good things are already taking place, and we appreciate this approach going forward first before we start creating new mandates and creating new burdens that are going to get in the way of the good things that are already happening. So just for the record, Madam Chair, members, MREA is very much in support of this approach. Thank you
very much. Representative Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, for starters, I want to compliment the authors because I was not a supporter of your bill a half hour ago. And I'm now grudgingly leaning toward being kind and gentle. But I must say that I think that much of this is unnecessary at this time. I question why we have to do this when you state that school districts are already sharing services and procurement. Pick up the telephone, superintendent to superintendent. We don't need the state auditor to do this for us. My main concern is further alienating small businesses who provide services to school districts and run into situations where we further the problem between small business and local boards of education at levy referendum time. We have enough problem as it is, the relationship between businesses and public education in rural Minnesota as it is. And lastly, starting 2.1 to 2.5, if you would look at those last...
Representative Van Zelt, we're on the DE1 amendment, which was a delete-off.
Yes.
Maybe you like the bill even better now.
I apologize. Yeah, I was speaking to the bill.
Very good. Representative Van Zelt, asked a question. I think he was speaking to the other bill, but we have like one more minute left for this hearing, so it looks like Representative McFarland would like to respond. And we have to have some obstacles for this bill. We can't have just a total love fest. Representative McFarland.
Well, I would, I'm sorry you hadn't read the delete all before you made those comments, Representative Ansel, but this is one reason that we decided to do this as far as the business community. We do not want to offend our partners in business to the schools and to the state.
And that is why we prefer this type of program versus what was brought forward in the other body. The other thing you said about, you know, districts can call each other. It wasn't until we started doing research that we learned about the Southwest Service Cooperative in Southwest Minnesota. Everybody doesn't have the time to pick up the phone and call all districts across the state. Wouldn't it be nice to go to a site where a clearinghouse and be able to see what other people are already doing and then be able to call those people that have expertise in that area instead of wasting your time calling everybody?
Very good. Mr. Walsh.
Madam Chair, members, at great risk of offending my good friend, Rep. Van Zelt, I do actually think this bill is needed and necessary. MREA is working with a process with a lot of superintendents to try and pull them together to talk about what they're doing. And it is a very time-consuming and cumbersome process. Superintendents, business folks, school business officials are very busy. Pulling them together at different regional meetings is time-consuming. I think if we could have an online clearinghouse of information that is available, that is developed by those folks, that would be a great benefit to school districts and local governments out there. We are very, very cognizant, and that's why MRA is very much opposed to the other approach, because we want to be, we are very concerned about relationships with local vendors. Anywhere between 5 to 20% of a school district's budget is derived from local operating dollars, and we need to be able to work with those businesses and to be able to tell them we can spend dollars locally. So we're Representative Anzo, we hear that concern very, very loud and clear. We share that concern, but I do think having a clearinghouse of information of best practices will be beneficial to the people we're representing.
Thank you, Representative Wells. 30 seconds, and then we actually do have to vote. Closing statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First of all, this has been a labor of love, and when we were getting ready to leave Marshall, former Senator Mo, I guess you're always a senator, once a senator, but he called Carol and I aside and pulled us together and said, you two are doing this exactly right. You are a model of what best practices should be in the legislature. And he said, we are in extraordinary times, and you two are showing how legislators should work together to get significant work done. And so Representative McFarland and I have bonded. We're talking about future road trips, and I think we're going to be a lot of trouble around here over the next few months. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much, and hopefully future legislation as well. And it sounds like former Senator Moe said all the things I would say, so I won't say them again. But I will say one thing for Senator Moe. Normally, we do not talk about the other body and this body, so why we're doing it so much when you're here is beyond me. Representative Wells renews her motion that House File 1665, as amended, be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed to the Finance Committee. Thank you very, very much. Representative Abler, you did make it in here.
Never mind. Thank you. We're deciding oral health practitioners and what to do about preventative services and medical assistance. Would you rather do that or rather be here?
Okay, and I will tell you before you start, and if you have someone to move your bill, they can raise their hand. Otherwise, I will move it. And we have two more bills left. So we have to divide up the time that's remaining.
Sir, I just want like 4 minutes.
Oh, that. Well, then we won't bother with that.
So I just, so if somebody would maybe Representative Newton wants to move.
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1222.
Representative Newton moves House File 1222 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Representative Abler.
Well, bipartisan collaboration, Madam Chair, with Representative Newton and I working together, joined once again. The committee, I presume, is pretty well informed about levies and debt service and all that. And if you want more information, I'm sure Mr. Strom has the 1 minute, 10 minute, and 45 minute version of this. But I brought the bill forward knowing there's no real money available. But if you have money available, this is the place to put it to get the most bang for the state dollar. Some districts cannot pass a levy. St. Francis is an example, and they're just in a world of hurt. And we tried at one point to the 2001. We thought it'd be great not to have levies, and we took over some levies, and how'd that work out for us? Anyway, good ideas that made sense at the time. But the fact of the matter remains is we're going to be in a shared funding model for the foreseeable future between locals and the state, and the only question is what percentage is that going to be? If it's shared, the new Minnesota Miracle is meant to replace the old Minnesota Miracle, which at the time made a lot of sense. The problem that happened in the meantime is that inflation happened to housing values and in Anoka, for instance, that were at one time Anoka paid 30 cents to get a dollar, now we pay 90 cents to get a dollar. And that's quite a bit of local burden. And you can fill in the blank for your particular district. And this is the mother of all equalization bills. Maybe Mr. Trump can give us a 30-second version of what this bill does technically, and I'll just, then I'll just finish up. And
Mr. Trump.
Since he wrote it.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Abler, there's a couple of printouts in the packet, both for this bill and the next, showing the effects of the enhanced equalization. What House File 1222 does is on the two different equalization programs, the referendum and the debt service equalization program, it does two things. First, it indexes those equalizing factors, which is how we determine the aid and levy split, to growth in the property tax value. And then secondly, it recalibrates the levels at which those equalizing factors are set. So, for example, on the referendum printout that's in your packet, which deals with the operating referendum, the first-tier equalizing factor, which is currently at $476,000 per pupil, is increased to $716,000 per pupil. And you can see, as you look up and down that printout, how those districts of moderate property wealth are affected by the enhanced equalization aid. The same kind of situation occurs on the debt service program. Representative Abler and Representative Doty's bills have slightly different equalizing factors, but the result is the same direction, that enhancing those equalizing factors increases the state aid in the program and decreases the local levy, depending on the district's property tax base.
Very good.
I couldn't have done
Representative
that.
Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anyway, so actually, this, Mr. Strom, if we did this today, what would it cost?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Abler, assuming no behavioral effects, if you look at the referendum printout, you'll see that that's about $100 million per year change.
Yeah. Madam Chair,
Representative Abler.
This is an excellent investment in a topic area as important as this. And then if that was invested, how much would be generated? And it would be like two or three times that would be generated into the system, right? Because of the levy, they would levy locally and... 100 million gets 200 million or something like that.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, yes, generally speaking, we presume that more referendum levies will pass if there's enhanced state assistance.
Yeah. And Madam,
Representative Abler.
So I just came to present this as an idea. And so this is even an index for inflation. So this is, if this passes, it would be a miracle, Madam Chair. but if you wanted to pass one to solve it, this is pretty close to it. And I wanted to at least give the committee that opportunity as they weigh heavily on the matters that concern us all. So. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you, Representative Abler. As you know, there is a lot more equalization in the new Minnesota Miracle, which needs a miracle as well. So
I
appreciate
you.
Your bringing this
idea
forward.
We're all in this together. Thank you, ma'am.
Yep.
Thank you, ma'am. Mindy?
And House File 1222 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Doty, and Representative Ward is prepared to move your bill.
Oh, look at my good.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I will move House File 1772. I assume to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Ward, move House File 1772 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First of all, thank you for the magnificent amount of work you've put in trying to redo Minnesota's education funding, which sadly in many areas is outdated. Things which were wonderful ideas when they were put in are no longer doing their best for all districts. And one of the things that's doing the most damage in my area is the debt equalization formula. And fortunately, my area also has someone who understands that issue extremely well. And side of me, actually two of them are alongside of me, Dean Peterson from the Upsala School Board and Earl Mathis from the Upsala School Superintendent. And I will turn it over to them. There's a handout, I believe, that they're going to be speaking to you from.
Thank you, Representative Doty. And we know that especially Dean Peterson understands this because we sometimes hear from him, and the fiscal staff says he knows what he's talking about. So welcome, Mr. Peterson. Are you first, then?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman and the committee. So I'm going to try and make it pretty
quick. Your name.
Dean Peterson. I'm the chairman of the Upsala School Board. And here today to plead our case for trying to do something, anything, to help with the debt equalization crisis in some communities. It's not everywhere. A lot of communities used to get a few bucks out of it. Some got a lot. But The money's really dried up the last few years, and I've got a little bit of a presentation. I think if you've got this with you in your packet there, you can look at it, and you can see kind of where we're going. Don't have a written speech, but I can kind of fly through these graphs in a few minutes so everybody can get home. Upper left-hand corner, this one looks like a bunch of bad pie here. When we went to our voters, we employed Eilers and Associates to help us help our public understand what this is going to cost. And we kind of promised them, and Eilers had stuff showing right to the bitter end, that our folks would be paying about $400,000 a year, and the state would be paying about $500,000 in state aid. We're bottom 5% in ANPC per pupil unit, basically how much property wealth you have per kid. We're right down in the bottom, and yet we had a 1922 portion of the building we needed to replace. We needed to completely renovate the 69 and 54 portions following a failed attempted consolidation with another district that declined to go into it. We looked at that upper left-hand corner situation, and as a board, we felt that was the most those folks could afford. It was oppressive, very expensive to folks out there. But we passed it, and then they passed overwhelming. They loved the new school, but on the school board, I've been watching in horror the last few years as the promise we made those people has turned out to be a lie. And we've learned a lot about that equalization and property tax inflation and other things maybe we should have known more about at the beginning. I don't know if anyone could have seen this coming. But as you see the situation we are in today, now with some flattening of real estate values, but the situation isn't degrading as fast. We're sitting in a bad spot. And you can see how a local levy started at $396,000 and now we're up to $625,000. And we would like to get this fixed and get it indexed at a level that so that we don't get back here again. We might see a little bit of real estate deflation the next year, so we might see some stability here for a bit. But these folks are still paying some oppressive taxation. The next graph is just the exact same way of looking at the same thing. You can see the blue line is the local levy. You can see the red line is the state aid coming down again, stabilizing 07, 08 of real estate values, and the sales ratios are flattening out a bit. The third page shows... Basically, we feel that we don't know why debt equalization would be any less important now than it was in the last two decades. Through the 90s and the 2000s, this is something the state always spent money on, and I guess that was kind of our assurance that it was going to continue. And for whatever reason, this thing hasn't been kept. We feel as if somebody, whether it's in the governor's end or down here, but this thing isn't being kept up with. And you can see here, we're headed for zero. There's only like, what, $11 million being spent right now? Yeah, it's nothing. And the need is still as great as it ever was. There's still a 4 or 5 to 1 ratio of property wealth per pupil unit across the state. And the people with the lowest amount of property wealth pay the most. It's not a real city issue. There's a lot of cities in the same boat, communities that had to build all new facilities and growing facilities like Farmington, Centennial, very much in the same boat we're in. Another way of looking at the problem, here's the graph that shows if you were a wealthier community, how even as the value of a home increased, the net number of dollars you still needed to collect stayed the same, so no rate cut down, and you were collecting the same number of dollars from your taxpayers. And yet, in those communities that depended on state aid for some portion of their bond payments, those things have skyrocketed. In our case, a $100,000 home, when we built the school, we were asking the folks around $300, and now they're up in the sixes. I wish you were there to share some of the phone calls from my constituents when they call me. We see 3 bills in the hopper on the house side of things. I guess one of the main reasons I'm here besides asking for help is we're convinced something's going to be done, but we're deeply concerned about how it's going to happen. We have a bill here from bill number HF-428. You can see that the aid there is somewhat limited. These are indexed bills, and our concern is that we were in crisis mode in 2007, and some of these index bills are going to lock us into the situation we were when we were in a crisis. It's a little bit better than the worst, but it's going to put us in a bad spot and leave us there. In the case of, say, a 30% real estate deflation situation, we may be better off with the bill we got now than indexing at a bad rate. The next one refers to Representative Abler's bill that he just spoke to, and we've graphed there also. We see there's some more aid there. It's getting better. One concern with lowering the thresholds where the equalization aid comes in, we are keenly aware of the budget situation down here, and we realize there isn't much money to go around, and if you lower those thresholds, it's going to wind up putting a few bucks in a lot of pockets, and really what we need to fix this is maybe a lot of bucks in a few pockets, basically putting out fire where there's a crisis. and that's why we like Representative Doty's bill, which is the next page, and you can see how 5-6 years ago when we built our school, we started out paying about what an average property wealth district would pay, and this gets us back down to there. We don't know if there's enough money anymore to take a medium property wealth type district and reduce the property taxes at state expense to make it more like a wealthy district. Either there's not enough dollars out there anymore. We need to do is we need to look at these districts, Upsala, Centennial, Farmington, some of these districts that are in crisis, that can't pass operating levies that are big enough because we're already soaking these people so hard. We need to look at what can we do to help in the districts where they're out there and they're paying 30%, 32% tax capacity rates where the state average is 13, you know. So anyway, that's a graphical representation of this. The mechanics, the basic architecture of the debt equalization formula, I don't know if we owe that to Dr. Melcher or who, Mr. Strom, whoever dreamt it. It works very well. Those that have the most debt pay the most. Those that have the lowest property wealth pay the most. But with the proper equalization, it can be done in such a way that they don't pay dramatically the most. This doesn't take a place like Upsala who's got a huge problem and drop a bunch of cash on their head and put us ahead of someone else with a lesser problem. We'll always pay them off. And you can see the history of these equalizing factors here. Representative Abler's bill indexes them at 75 and 125, but we can see at the time we built this school, the equalizing factors were really pretty little under 100% and then up over 200%. That second-tier equalizing factor does wonders for districts that are having a debt equalization crisis. And that was part of our concern with the first HF 428, I believe, and that it eliminated the second tier, which is going about this entirely the wrong way. If you're going to eliminate something because you don't have any money, you eliminate the first tier because you can wind up throwing... Eliminating the second tier puts a lot of dollars out there that gets spread thinly over the whole state, but it doesn't preserve enough to help the people that are really in crisis. And to kind of... As a synopsis, I guess actually I was going to write down what, and again, you're, Mr. Strom, may not agree with my analysis here, but we've got an objective. We need to allow districts with insufficient tax capacity to provide their students with adequate facilities if the residents choose to pay dearly for them, which is exactly what you have to do. If you're in a Farmington or in a Centennial with that needs to build all the facilities, so you basically got a new town, you know, or at a place like Upsala where we're a single building district, all the money gets poured in at one time. We missed a couple cycles. We didn't build anything in the 70s or the 80s. We built, and so we have a high debt load. We didn't build fancy. It's a nice, simple school. It works great, but we did not overdo it. A lot of places have 2,000 debt service per year that don't have extravagant facilities. This isn't the case of building Taj Mahal. To facilitate building schools in communities like Upsala, Farmington, and Centennial, you're going to have expensive taxes. But the debt service tax rates cannot be so high as to substantially hinder growth nor to preclude the reasonable possibility of passing at least average size operating levies. Right now, up to the SOD, we went through two or three shots of trying to pass an operating levy that we couldn't do, and we had to keep reducing and reducing it, and people would stand up at a public meeting and say, I love your school, I can't vote for this. And it's due to us taxing them so heavily on a building at a rate we never intended to happen. And again, these are not freebies. These districts that will get the funds as a result of this bill don't go to the front of the line. They still pay the most. And if they build more, they'll pay more. It's a very equitable situation. And in the current environment, we need to accomplish this with the least possible cost to state. You guys have got bigger problems than we do, but you've got your problems, we've got ours, and we're saying as we're here, we appreciate Representative Geiling's Minnesota Miracle Bill. This is essentially the percentages and stuff are exactly what's in the Miracle Bill. We don't know. We want to make sure something's being done, even if that thing is going to take a while. If the Miracle Bill is going to be phased in, we want to have a hand in how it's phased in to make sure it happens in the right way. We see some confusion as far as the way these equalizing factors are. It's not immediately obvious what these are going to do to people. It's not apparent on the face of it. You have to have a spreadsheet that's this big by this big, and you start plugging the numbers in it, and it shows you what happens. So my recommendations are, is for now, keep both tier thresholds where they are. Make people exceed a certain level of taxation before they get some help. Tier 1 equalization factor should be 100% or less than 100%. It never was over 100%. at least not back into the 90s perhaps. But the big deal, the big help to us for people that are having a big problem is enhance that Tier 2. Put it up at a high level. We got 225 in Representative Doty's bill. Get it up at that level. For the once someone achieves that rate, once they are hitting people at 25%, let's really bring that thing down. Every marginal dollar is going to cost them. But let's charge them at basically the lowest rate. The people that, once they achieve the 25% under this bill, their marginal dollars, their every additional dollar of building expense will be taxed very much like it would be in a YZ or an Edina.
Mr. Peterson, are we going to hear from Superintendent Matheson too, do you think? Is he here for questions or to be heard from too? Because we've got 5 minutes left. Mr. Superintendent Matheson, welcome.
Very briefly, I'm here for an office of Superintendent of Upper Schools. I've been around as a superintendent since 1977. I retired in 2001, Upper became open 2 years ago. I joined around 16 miles from my retirement home, and I love it. Wonderful community, wonderful facilities, very economic facilities. They do not have travel halls. They do not have ceramic tiled walls. They get cement block walls with epoxy paint. They got some cement, colored cement to the floors. They got some vinyl tiles. It's a very efficient building. I've been around for a long time, done a number of things back in the late 70s, early 80s. We talked about equalization. And there's a lawsuit. It failed. But the legislators at the time listened and they said, it makes sense. We've got to do something about the inequities that are out there. Now I'm here again, and we see inequities with that sort of equalization. And I know that your heart would be in the right place saying, we've got to do something about this. And Dean has more knowledge about this than I do, and he can certainly fill you in on any of the issues and how the system works better than I can. But I just want to share a little bit that after all these years of experience, we're still there. And I appeal to you to do what's needed so that those who are hurting the most get some help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And members, Mr. Peterson is a very good example of someone who helped us with improve the new Minnesota Miracle. We had debt service equalization in, but we didn't have it quite this way. And you can see there are many, many proposals. And we ended up putting it in that way. And I was explaining that at an MSBA state convention and said we had this person from Uppsala who helped us with this. And there he was in the audience to take credit from the whole crowd. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to say there must have been a scheduling error because we should have had this bill next Tuesday down in my district because Representative Doty, 15% of this bill goes to my district in Farmington that I live in. So you get this put through, I'll come up and campaign for you in Little Falls next year.
If you do.
Yeah. The second point is I just want to highlight, and maybe Mr. Strom could briefly cover this for a couple of minutes, is the adjusted net tax capacity on a per pupil basis. It's important to look at this, members, to see, for example, that Farmington, the district I'm in, we have an ANTC of $49.94, while a property wealthy district like 361 up in International Falls, they got $6,200 of tax capacity per pupil unit. And maybe if Mr. Strom could just take a minute just to, I don't know if you want to go through all the equalizing factors, but maybe just perhaps explain the debt service equalization, Madam Chair, if you'd allow that.
Mr. Strom, in a minute is about what we have.
Madam Chair, members, there's a printout in your packet that shows the debt service revenue for fiscal year 2011, taxes payable in 2010. What Representative Garofalo is speaking about is the way we derive an equalizing factor, the way we determine relative property wealth of the community is by taking the tax base of the community, all of the assessed value of the community divided by the pupil count for that community. And in the third count, column on the spreadsheet, you'll see those values on a per pupil district, on a district basis. So in other words, for here on the second page for the Farmington School District, which is District 192, taking the total value of that school district divided by its 7,100 pupils yields an adjusted net tax capacity of $4,994 per pupil. That amount then is compared to the equalizing factor when we have equalizing factors. In current law, that equalizing factor for the first tier is set at $3,200 per pupil, and for the second tier at $8,000 per pupil. So you take essentially to make the levy share the ratio of the district's tax base per kid to those equalizing factors. So on that second tier of equalization, the Farmington School District's ratio is the $49.94 compared to the $8,000 under current law, or about 5/8 of their revenue in the second tier would come from the local levy. If you go up towards the top of the sheet to a property wealthy district, for example, the Walker-Hackensack district, you can see their tax base for pupil, their District 113, is $23,000 per pupil by taking the tax base of that district divided by its 1,000 pupil units. And because that's bigger than the equalizing factors, that district doesn't receive any state aid under the debt service equalization aid program.
Thank you very much. Representative Grackle, we'll continue this next Tuesday, but you have one final comment because we are out of time.
I apologize, Madam Chair. I just want to make members of the committee aware of what happened in the tax committee today with Representative Szymanski's bill. And I don't know if you're familiar with it at all. I can wait for another time.
Why don't we save it because we are out of time, but we should all talk about that. And I think we followed that as well. Representative Doty, do you have a final comment before we lay your bill over?
Very briefly, Madam Chair. This part of school funding is obviously one that has more inequality in it than most, and there are a few districts that are really suffering, and this is the poster child in front of you, and I appreciate the time of the committee today and the time of your staff this summer for helping us out with this.
Thank you, Representative Doty and Superintendent Matheson and School Board Member Peterson for coming all this way and helping us. This is a problem. Representative Ward renews his motion that House File 1772 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.